It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
Due to statewide budget cuts, the Department of Labor here in Virginia is no longer itself working on claims for unpaid wages. But the department, of course, did not want to leave employees here in Virginia who have not been paid their wages without some sort of method or recourse to recover their wages. So what the department did to provide, you know, employees with some sort of assistance is to appoint our firm, Dunlap Weaver, as special counsel under Virginia's payment of wage law to assist employees with collecting their wages. And that was done, of course, with the approval of the Office of the Attorney General of Virginia.
Private attorney Cortland Puttbreeze from Dunlap Weaver explains the payment of wage law, which his law firm has been enforcing since July 1st, 2012, and what to do if his firm can't handle your wage claim. And during this week's News You Can Use, you'll learn how starting next year, debt buyers in the Roanoke area actually will have to prove a debt is owed before they can get a judgment. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 188, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. Starting January 1st, 2013, debt collectors in Roanoke City, Roanoke County, and Salem City must comply with best practices guidelines. Similar guidelines exist in Fairfax County, Newport News, and City of Richmond General District Courts. These guidelines set forth specific proof requirements to ensure the integrity and validity of judgments. The debt collection lawsuit must identify the parties to the claim, including the name of the current and original debt holders. The lawsuit must identify a basis for the claim, and if based on a written contract, produce the original document or a lost document affidavit if the original can't be located. The creditor must attach to the lawsuit all documents supporting the full chain of assignment, showing that the plaintiff is the owner of the debt. And each assignment must contain the debtor's name and the account number associated with the debt. The creditor also must submit all documents containing the amount claimed as currently owed, broken down by principal due at the time of default, interest, fees, and other charges. If the claim is based upon a credit card, then the plaintiff shall produce at least one statement showing defendant's actual use of the credit card during the default period. If the claim is based upon an open account, the plaintiff must produce a copy of the account showing the date the account was opened, with whom, the original account number, debit and payment histories, the date the account was charged off, and the amount due on the account. Absent a signed credit card holder agreement, attorney's fees will not be allowed, and interest will be awarded at the judgment rate of 6% rather than at the credit card contract rate. If a judgment is requested on an affidavit, it must inform the debtor of the basis of the claim, include the identity of the original creditor, and show the chain of transfers of the account from the original creditor to the current plaintiff. Not only must the affidavit state that the affiant is familiar with the account, but also has examined the documents showing the basis of the claim, the chain of transfer of the account, and the plaintiff's ownership of the account. If the defendant does not appear in court, the plaintiff must submit all documents to the judge, who will note the defendant's default. At the end of the docket, the judge will closely examine each case to determine the completeness and accuracy of the documents. If complete and accurate, the court will enter judgment. If not, the case will be dismissed without prejudice, so it may be refiled. With this week's news you can use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's case that changed the Commonwealth is Lovejoy versus Heckler. Grethel Lovejoy applied for Social Security disability benefits in December 1981 because of pains in her chest, shortness of breath, and pains in her joints and legs. After a hearing, an administrative law judge granted benefits, but the appeals council, on its own motion, reversed, relying in part on the fact that Ms. Lovejoy had not had treatment nor taken any prescribed medication for her alleged pain. The U.S. District Court agreed, but the U.S. Court of Appeals reversed and awarded benefits. Ms. Lovejoy testified at the hearing that she had very little income and lacked the funds to seek medical help or medication for her ailments. The Fourth Circuit ruled that a claimant may not be penalized for failing to seek treatment she cannot afford, and that it flies in the face of the patent purposes of the Social Security Act to deny benefits to someone because he is too poor to obtain medical treatment that may help him. This has been the law ever since. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and Lovejoy versus Heckler is this week's case that changed the Commonwealth.
Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. We're here in the west end of Henrico County. We're speaking with Cortland Puttbreeze. He is a private attorney with the firm of Dunlap Weaver, which is special counsel to the Virginia Department of Labor and Industry. And we will be talking today about wage claims and the payment of wage law. Welcome to the show, Cortland.
Thank you, Martin. I appreciate the opportunity to meet with you today.
Appreciate the opportunity to have you on the show. Would you tell our listeners exactly what is the payment of wage law?
Payment of wage law is a statute that was enacted by the Virginia General Assembly, which establishes regular pay periods for employees in the Commonwealth of Virginia and provides a mechanism to ensure that employees are indeed paid the wages that they're entitled to for the work that they're performed.
Now, you said that it establishes regular pay period. When do wages have to be paid to an employee?
Sure. Under the statute, if you are an hourly employee, then the statute requires that you are to be paid on a bi-monthly basis. However, if you're a salaried employee, then under the statute, you must be paid at least once a month.
How do you distinguish between an employee who may have a wage claim under the payment of wage law from someone who is an independent contractor whose claim may not fall under the payment of wage law?
And you did raise a good point there, Martin, because under Virginia's payment of wage law, it does not apply to independent contractors and only applies to employees. So to make that determination, we generally look at the pay history as well as, you know, written documentation that the employee provides. For example, we look to see if there are taxes coming out of the individual's paycheck. And if taxes are indeed coming out, then that's an indicator that the individual is an employee rather than an independent contractor. Another factor that we look at is to determine whether or not the employer submitted a W-2 form or alternatively a W-9 form. You know, under federal law, W-9 forms are submitted by employers for independent contractors, whereas a W-2 form relates to employees. So that those are some of the things that we look at.
Oh, so I see there are definite documents that could determine employees versus independent contractors. Now, assuming it is an employee, are there specific employees who are excluded from the payment of wage law, or does it apply to everyone across the board?
Virginia's payment of wage law applies to all private sector employees in the Commonwealth of Virginia. It does not, however, as I understand the law, apply to public sector employees.
So for this law to apply, where does the work need to have been performed?
Generally speaking, the work needs to be performed within the Commonwealth of Virginia. However, as recently over the past few years, as I understand it, the Department of Labor has enforced the law where a contract was signed with an employee in the Commonwealth of Virginia and that employee actually performs work, or at least some of the work, outside of the state.
The payment of wage law obviously talks about wages. So what specifically is meant by wages that can be recovered under the payment of wage law?
The term wages would include hourly wages, but it also includes commissions as well as salaried type of wages. At least that is our interpretation of the payment of wage law.
What about items like vacation pay, sick pay, severance pay, holiday pay, other fringe benefits, or even business expenses? Would they be included in the term wages under the payment of wage law?
Very good question, Martin. My recollection of the statute is that it does not explicitly address those, and traditionally, I believe the Department of Labor has not included those types of monetary payments within the scope of Virginia's payment of wage law.
Who is allowed to enforce Virginia's payment of wage law?
Virginia's payment of wage law charges the Virginia Department of Labor and Industry and provides it with the responsibility of enforcing that particular statute. And I should add that under that statute, the Department of Labor, with the approval of the Attorney General, can appoint special counsel to collect, you know, any monies owed to employees within the Commonwealth of Virginia.
So how is the payment of wage law currently being enforced? I know that up until June 30th of 2012, it was being enforced by the Virginia Department of Labor and Industry. I gather that has changed. Would you tell our audience what the change has been?
Due to statewide budget cuts, the Department of Labor here in Virginia is no longer itself working on claims for unpaid wages. But the department, of course, did not want to leave employees here in Virginia who have not been paid their wages without some sort of method or recourse to recover their wages. So what the department did to provide, you know, employees with some sort of assistance is to appoint our firm, Dunlap Weaver, as special counsel under Virginia's payment of wage law to assist employees with collecting their wages. And that was done, of course, with the approval of the Office of the Attorney General of Virginia.
So in addition to recovering the unpaid wages, are there any other remedies that are available to the Virginia Department of Labor and Industry, or now special counsel Dunlap Weaver, under this payment of wage law?
Well, there's a couple of different remedies available under Virginia's payment of wage law. For example, when the Department of Labor was handling these types of claims, the Department of Labor could assess civil penalties against an employer, a delinquent employer who failed to pay wages without justification under the law. That is no longer the case. You know, as special counsel, Dunlap Weaver is not attempting to collect civil penalties. I should also add that under Virginia's payment of wage law, that employees are not only entitled to collect their unpaid wages, but they're also entitled to collect interest that has accrued on those unpaid wages in an annual rate of 8% from the date the wages were due.
So these claims are now being handled by your firm, Special Counsel Dunlap Weaver. Is there anything that an employee must do before submitting a wage claim to special counsel?
If an employee comes to us and says that, they have not been paid their wages and they would like to make a claim through the Office of Special Counsel, we ask them, have you at least made a claim against your employer? Have you demanded your wages from your employer? Because it makes sense that they do that, because it's very possible that if they haven't already done so, then, they should do that because they might be able to collect their wages without the assistance of special counsel. Other than that, and that's not a requirement, but we do ask that employees do that first. We also ask that the employees fill out what we call a claim form that provides us with information about their claim.
And that request of the employee to the employer for the unpaid wages, does that have to be in writing, or would an oral request suffice for your purposes?
Both would suffice for our purposes. However, we would prefer that it be in writing. And the reason why is because if you have a request in writing, then you have written documentation that we can use as evidence in the event that, we take the case and have to proceed to trial to try to collect the wages. Having something in writing is more tangible than just a, oral testimony saying, from the employee saying, I did request my wages and was denied.
So would you lead us through the procedure? What is the process that unpaid workers should go through to submit a wage claim to Special Counsel Dunlap Weaver?
There is a toll-free number for Dunlap Weaver that employees can call if they have any questions. Also, there is a website that we have called www.vawageclaim.com. And we request that employees go to that website and fill out, as I indicated earlier, a claim form that provides us with specific information about their claim. And if an employee, of course, does not have access to the internet, we are more than happy to send them a hard copy of the claim form. Once an employee submits the claim form, we will do an initial evaluation to determine whether or not they have provided us with sufficient documentation. And Martin, I should add that oftentimes the claimant does not necessarily provide us with all the documentation they have for their claim. And we ask that an employee do provide us with as much documentation as possible.
And what type of documentary evidence supporting a wage claim are we talking about here? What is it that you're looking for?
We are looking for anything that would support their claim. Specifically, we would love to see pay stubs that shows what type of method of payment they were receiving with respect to their wages. Were they an hourly employee? Were they a salaried employee, a commission employee? We also, as I indicated earlier, would love to see a request in writing by the employee to their employer or former employer seeking their wages. And the gold mine is if we could have some sort of correspondence from the employer indicating, whatever reason why they're not paying the wages.
So you get these claims. How does special counsel decide which claims to accept and which claims are just not going to be taken?
It's discretionary in the sense that, we are looking for documentary evidence. How much documentary evidence is, of course, up to, the attorney reviewing the file. But we do ask for at least some sort of documentary evidence because that helps us to assess the claim. We do err on the side of accepting the claim, even if there's the potential for, not having sufficient documentary evidence, because, we're charged with assisting employees in the Commonwealth of Virginia, and that's what we want to do. We want to help employees.
So once Special Counsel Dunlap Weaver accepts this claim, what happens next?
What we will do is we will send a demand letter to the employer requesting the wages, unpaid wages, on behalf of the employee. And, oftentimes the employer will respond and will attempt to resolve the matter amicably with the eye towards recovering those unpaid wages for the employee. If the employer does not respond to the demand letter or alternatively it's not able to resolve amicably, then assuming the employee would like us to do so, we will initiate a lawsuit against the employer to collect those wages. And we take an aggressive position. I mean, we're here to help employees. And so, we're looking to try to collect those wages for them.
So will special counsel, if needed, take a case to court anywhere in Virginia?
Absolutely. We assist employees all across the Commonwealth of Virginia.
And I'm curious, what is the mechanism for doing that? I know your offices are located here in Richmond. There are offices in Northern Virginia, and I know there are offices in other states. Do you cover the whole state of Virginia out of the two offices, or do you retain local counsel, or what's the mechanism for doing that statewide?
That's correct. As you indicated, we have two offices, one in Northern Virginia and then an office in Richmond. A bulk of our wage claims come out of Northern Virginia simply because it's a heavily populated area, so our Northern Virginia office handles those particular claims. The Richmond office handles claims for the rest of the state. And so, you know, that's what we're charged with. We have not retained local counsel to assist. And when I say local counsel, I mean attorneys in other cities in the Commonwealth of Virginia. But that's certainly something that is up for consideration if that need should ever arise.
Now, is there a minimum amount that the claim has to be for special counsel to take it to either the employer for resolution outside of court or to take it to court if the employer will not resolve it?
There is a minimum amount. Our firm requires that the claim for unpaid wages exceeds $2,500. And as you indicated earlier, we also request and require that the employee provide some sort of documentation supporting their unpaid wage claim.
So if an employee does have a wage claim for more than $2,500, is the employee required to go through special counsel?
No. The employee has the option of retaining their own private counsel of their choice. The employee could proceed what we call pro se, meaning they can proceed on their own and file a lawsuit in the courts if they so choose. I should add, though, that Virginia's payment of wage law does not provide an employee with a private right of action should the employee retain their own private counsel or proceed on their own pro se. That said, it is our position as special counsel that the statute, meaning Virginia's payment of wage statute, would provide an employee with a private right of action in the event that the employee were to retain us to pursue their claim.
So is there a fee to the employee to file a wage claim through special counsel?
There is no fee. Under the statute, Virginia's payment of wage statute, that is, the statute requires that in the event that the employee recovers a favorable verdict at trial, that the court shall assess attorney's fees of one-third of the amount set forth in the final judgment or order. So that means that in the event that we obtain a judgment in favor of the employee, that the employee would not be responsible for paying attorney's fees. Rather, it would be up to the employer, who would be required under Virginia's payment of wage statute, to pay our attorney's fees.
Thank you very much. We have been talking with Cortland Puttbreeze. He is an attorney with the firm of Dunlap Weaver, which recently was appointed special counsel to handle wage claims formerly handled by the Virginia Department of Labor and Industry. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Martin. It's been a pleasure speaking with you today.
You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's Strange But True Law is from Title 65.2, which deals with workers' compensation. Under Code of Virginia Section 65.2-601, the right to workers' compensation shall be forever barred unless a claim is filed with the Virginia Workers' Compensation Commission within 2 years after the accident. Even if the employer voluntarily pays workers' compensation without a claim being filed, the employer may stop doing so 2 years and a day after the accident. And if the employee never filed a claim with the commission, the employee will never get any additional compensation. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King, and that's this week's Strange But True Law.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio show ever broadcast is available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral four, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. A reverse mortgage can turn your home into a true retirement nest egg, which provides you income and a place to live. Join us next Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. when elder law attorney Sean Majette and reverse mortgage consultant Jim Warrens give us the straight facts and dispel the many myths about reverse mortgages. That's law for the rest of us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.